My name is Steve Watson. First of all, I just want to say for the record, I absolutely agree with the position that we have to build a permanent, ongoing anti-war movement and not an episodic one every time the United States decides to bomb somebody. But I would like to direct a question, if I might, to Shahrzad Mojab. And I do this with the greatest respect because I'm not from a country that's Islamic. I'm not from. I'm not a Muslim. I'm a very poor student of Islam because I have only begun recently to try to understand this religion. I react when I read so much propaganda directed at somebody or a people or a faith. My instinctive reaction is to go and find out what I can. That is not propaganda. So I actually have started to read the Quran and to read what Islamic scholars have to say about this religion. I'm not pleased with everything that I find, but I find that it's a good antidote to propaganda because I can make up my own mind. I'm a little concerned that, I mean, I look around the audience tonight and I see an audience mainly made up, mainly, not entirely made up of people who are like me, not from an Islamic background. And I'm a little concerned that somehow prejudices that people have in their minds about Islam have been reinforced. What I like to, maybe I put it this way, do not women are there not Muslim women in Islamic countries who want to practice their faith in freedom without people telling them, you know, that this is how they have to do it? I mean, this is, I think, something that we should carry away. If I were a Muslim,
I think the point
I would. I think I've made it, my question. I'm trying to express it as best I can. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Somebody from this.
Hi, yes. Okay, I guess I just wanted to comment on the speakers I heard tonight, and I was very moved on all the empathy I heard on stage, and I just also wanted to comment on the actual occurrence of September 11th. I found it interesting, before any of the retaliatory attacks took place, to watch the news and note that the buildings hit were the Pentagon and were the World Trade Center, and the specific reasoning behind that. These were not the attacks of madmen, so to speak, but they were trying to prove a political point, and one that we should address if we are to find any kind of resolution to terrorism. Perhaps we should address the concerns of people who have been impoverished for many years and who, you know, whether it definitely was the wrong way to voice these opinions, but perhaps we should listen to what they have to say. That's all.
Thank you. Somebody on that.
Thank you. My name is Jamshid. I'm with the Worker Communist Party of Iran. I had a few comments about what I heard tonight. Well, first of all, I would like to mention that what we heard concretely on the question of what is to be done is three things. Expose the media, as Tariq put it. break the censorship or whatever, find a new way to communicate. I think this is what he meant by that. Expose the media and then open up some free channels of communication. Fight for your civil liberties against Western powers. And in what Shahrzad Mojab said, I heard, expose Islamic fundamentalism, or as I would like to put it, political Islam. And its number one weapon, or just the other sign of the coin for it, is terrorism. What I didn't hear was the shortcomings of the present pacifist movement, just anti-war movement that we are witnessing in the West. It is a so far, generally speaking, on the West, we witness the growth of these protest movements that do not question, that do not seriously criticize or expose what political Islam is doing already. In countries like Iran or Sudan or Afghanistan for the sake of not creating any more disturbances or racial this or racial that. I think this is all to be exposed. Even multiculturalism, cultural relativism, in the context of exposing that, you have to criticize even the policy of multiculturalism.
So I think that if the point is clear for discussion, I think look at the lineups behind.
Yeah, I will. I just want to say, apart from fighting for Palestine, for the solution of the problem of Palestine, we have to fight for the removal of sanctions on Iraqi people. And as I said, we have to expose severely fundamentalism in the West and not give any concessions to them. And we also have to demand the Western governments to put a stop on the support that they have had in the past, and they continue to have for the reactionary Islamic governments in the world.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe if we get a couple more questions, please, and then we'll get some reactions. I know this is a sign of a successful presentation. It's generated dissent. It's generated other concerns. And we didn't plan, I don't think any of the speakers planned to have it done today. So just a couple more questions, and then we'll get some dialogue going as well.
Hello. I learned last week that the bombs the Americans dropped on Iraq contained depleted uranium, and this has been poisoning the people there and causing cancer for 10 years. And I wanted to know, are the bombs they're dropping on Afghanistan containing uranium as well?
Oh, okay. I'd like to know that too. Anyway, this is for Mr. Rico. I was startled a bit by your comment that you felt that if your mother had been alive and you were sending money home to her, that you would have been considered a terrorist. I'm wondering whether you think that the list that they've made in Ottawa of so-called terrorist groups is overly expansive or is going to expand to every group. I'm also wondering, most of the Canadian gentlemen that have been arrested and are considered suspected terrorists here were refugees, and one of the big right-wing comments is that the refugee system is not working. And I guess I just wanted to hear you address that.
I have a question for Tariq. The other night I had dinner with a Russian fellow, and he commonly on the internet, he reads the Russian newspapers, he hears the Russian radio, and he said, you know, the way I see it, what's going to happen is that the Americans are going to pay the Russian generals to come and fight in Afghanistan, and the Russian soldiers will come because they're all destitute. And this sounded very plausible. And then today, and I've only heard it the once, I think it was the BBC, I heard that the Northern Alliance was moving, on the move, and along with the Russian troops. And nothing, you didn't mention today at all about the Russian involvement. I mean, you probably know more than about this. I wonder if you'd comment on that.
So should we get some responses, comments, and then we'll carry on.
The use of the concept religion fundamentalism that I've been continuously referring to in my presentation, I chose that advisedly. It means the system, political system, that is oppressive, misogynist, exclusionary, that creates a political system that is based on the principle of a religion and the way that that religion is interpreted, implemented, politicized by a group that are in power. And usually that group do not represent the majority of the people. That is including Christian fundamentalism, Islamic fundamentalism, and Jewish fundamentalism. This has nothing to do with the practice of the religion of Islam as a spirituality for one person and one individual practice, which I will respect that too. But when it turns into a political system that creates exclusion, that creates oppression, it is that system of thinking and a political system that I will oppose. This has nothing to do with the anti-racism actions that we need to take. Reading of Quran and trying to understand the principle of Quran does not make us an anti-racist activist, or does not give us enough knowledge of how to resist the racism in the society. So I think that it is very important that what I'm trying to say, that is, there is a symbiotic relationship between capitalism and fundamental and religious fundamentalisms of any sort. This is very important for us to understand. And that symbiotic relationship, it means that they coexist and benefit mutually from their existence. And I think that this is the way that for us, in terms of dealing with the racism that is going on in the society right now, it's so important to understand that. And what I'm talking about has nothing to do with the individual choice and the practice of any religion or any spirituality.
Three questions were posed to me, which I'll try and answer. One, to I agree very much with what has just been said. I would add one more thing, just to make it absolutely clear. No one opposes the right of anyone in any country to practice the faith they want to practice. So the person who said, do Muslim women in Muslim countries, are they not to be allowed to practice their faith, or don't they want to? It's not a question of whether they want to or not. If they want to, that's fine. The question is, what about the women who don't want to and are forced to? That's unacceptable. That is what we object to. The compulsory character of the compulsory edicts imposed on women in some of these regimes. It's not a question of voluntary. People can do what they want. To the question which was posed by a person over there about the symbolic character of the hits on New York and the Pentagon, I'd say they were symbolic. Yeah. They aimed at the military and economic might of the United States. But these were not acts of strength. They were acts of weakness. These are people who couldn't do what they really wanted to do, if you study their propaganda. They wanted to overthrow the Arab regimes in the Arab world, the Saudi Arabian regime in particular, and then the Egyptian regime. Well, why not do that? It's because they couldn't do that, that actually they went for the propaganda of the deed and made these hits. But the question is, do these hits further the cause, advance any cause, or do they weaken the movement as a whole? And in my opinion, terrorist acts, whoever carries them out, acts of individual terrorism, whenever they've been carried out, are essentially a sign of weakness and a sign saying that that's all we can do. We are angry, we are embittered, we are despairing. This is what we do to show you how much we hate you. Well, fine, but has it affected to a single thing, to a single degree, the economic or military might of the United States? And the answer is no. It's actually temporarily strengthened American hegemony on the world. It's not weakened it at all. It was a psychological blow. That was its only effect, and that will, you know, evaporate over the next few years. But it's not been a good thing, so we should have no illusions about that. Thirdly, I think there's no doubt that depleted uranium is being used, because that's what they use in the missiles which hit these countries. And the same missiles and the same bombs are being used in Afghanistan, which were being used in Iraq. At the time they were being used in Iraq, they denied that they were using depleted uranium. We now know that that was a lie, that in fact they did use it in Iraq, and Gulf War syndrome is partially the result of that, which Western troops are suffering from. More importantly, the number of deaths from cancer of children born in Iraq is just phenomenal. The UNESCO figures given are quite horrendous in this respect, and exactly the same thing, I'm pretty sure, is going on in Afghanistan. They haven't even denied it this time. Ah, the Russians. Look, I don't think that the Russians are going to get involved in this war directly. And the reasons are very obvious. The Russian generals who fought in Afghanistan are still around. And General Gromov, who was the last Russian soldier to withdraw from Afghanistan, warned the Americans that not to get involved in a land war. He sent a very, very long letter before the bombing began. Now, the Northern Alliance does get support from Tajikistan, which the Russians back, but there are no Russian soldiers fighting with the Northern Alliance, and I think there will not be. What the Russians have got out of this is a green light to do what they want in Chechnya, where 30,000 Chechens have already been killed and Grozny razed to the ground in their war against terrorism. They're quite happy with that. They don't want to go and send Russian soldiers or Russian officers to go and fight in Afghanistan. I don't think the United States has invited them to do so in any event, and they're certainly not going to volunteer.
In terms of they're going to spend the list, let me just put an example that happened a few weeks ago. At the end of August, I was a member of a delegation that went to Colombia, the Canadian delegation that went from different sectors. We went to meet with the invisible struggle in Colombia, with the peace communities, with the unions, with, you know, the black communities, the Afro-Colombians, name it. It was a wonderful experience. 2 or 3 weeks ago was an article in the National Post saying that we went to support the terrorist organizations of Colombia. This article was written by Diane Francis, of course, that is a well-known person. And now, you know, she made clear that it's a link between this delegation. She didn't prove anything, but she started the ball running. And of course, you find a Salvadorian guy that was a leader, a student leader in El Salvador, victim of torture, committed with the revolution of El Salvador in different ways, then came to Canada as a refugee, that never had denied that I was a member of different things. So do you think that I am not going to be put in the list? That's one thing. And the second thing is about the refugee system in Canada works. No, it doesn't work. We have almost 40 million of people that are either refugees, internal displaced, or people of concern of the UNHCR around the world. And we only accept in Canada 25,000 per year. Of course, it doesn't work. And the concern that these people are refugees, these refugees are concern of security or national security. Let me say that most of the people that come to this country, in a way, are people that are not concerned. The only problem that we have is that now, because the events, the people lacking with IDs, women, children, anybody, is going to be examined, you know, interrogated, and is going to look into that case in a way that is going to, even CSIS is going to be intervening in every single case it is possible, but under the excuse that they are looking for terrorism. 0.010% of the people that enter this country every single year are refugees. 0.010. If you are looking for terrorists in the refugee communities, you are missing totally the point.
Okay, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is we have time only for 5 more questions. And the good news is that Tariq Ali, as well as Scheherazade Mojab, will be available to sign their books and also answer any additional questions after this talk. We'll take questions to the right of...
Okay, thank you, Amina. I want to thank all the panelists, but my question is specifically for Tariq Ali. I wonder if you could speak more about the British anti-war movement. I think the 2 meetings you've participated in here have given you a really good sense of our strengths as well as our weaknesses, our debates and divisions. And I'm interested in what consensus you are building and how you are dealing with the same kinds of problems that we're confronting. Certainly the issues around gender that Scheherazade mentioned and anti-Muslim and other forms of racism.
Okay. To the left.
Thank you. I would like to make a comment in regard to the Islam, and also I have been hearing this, that in regard to Islam, some people that they call it, if you criticize Islam, they all of a sudden they jump into the air and say this is racism. This is racist remarks. I think if you want to look at it, Islam as a religion does not produce race. And Islam is a religion. It has been always a political religion from the beginning. Reemergence of the recent political action of the Islam or political Islam, it goes back to Scheherazade mentioned it about the during the Cold War. The Cold War era that they wanted, West in particular, United States wanted to prevent Soviet Union to get into the Persian Gulf. But going back to the discrimination and racism, Islam, is a fundamental of discrimination. When you look at it, when you read it, when you search it, I used to be a Muslim and I studied Islam for at least 5 years. I used to work in a mosque. And after the revolution in Iran, I came to a point to search it and on my own base.
Do you have a question, sir?
Yes, I will have a question. In regard to just answering to remarks that I heard about Islam, when you look at the women under Islam, they were considered to be second-class citizens. When you look at children, they're considered to be property of the father. A child which is only 9 years old, it's given... sold to marriage. Even Muhammad himself married. But anyway, going back to that one, I think the parallel that I can bring in regard to Islam is that it's like anti-Semitism. Each time anybody in the world criticizes Israel or Jewish so-called, whatever you want to call it, it's anti-Semitism.
Right
now we are hearing the same thing. It's anti-Islam, it means racism. My question is regard to aftermath of this bombing. I don't believe this is a war. It's militarism and military aggression against a population in around Middle East. And I don't think there is a war going on, because if there is anything, a conflict, it's in the same camp. The question is that what is going to be actually in place after so-called the Taliban regime? Are we going to go outside on the street and fight for a peace? What kind of peace? The peace that which was before September 11th? Was there any peace September 10th?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
I'll take the question on the right.
Yeah, this is for Tariq. I'd like a little bit more clarification, please, on Palestine. You did raise one point, and I think that you probably got an awful lot more to say than what you did say. And I was left with the feeling that if only the problem of, you know, Palestine had its own nation state, this wouldn't happen. I don't believe that. I believe that even if Palestine was a state, American interests strategically in the Middle East, there would be bombs going if oil was ever cut off. If they couldn't get their pipelines through, there'll be bombs, regardless of whether there's a Palestinian state or not. And I'm hoping that you'll address that a little bit more. Also, I'd like somebody to address the issue of class war. This war that we're feeling now here in Canada, there is a new war. It's a new war, and it's going to be against us, the working class. You don't see any anthrax getting through and people being pulled off the jobs unless they're ruling class people. It's the poor working class people who are left on the jobs to face any kind of attacks, whether they're from American fundamentalists or whether they're from the Middle East. We don't know. It doesn't matter. I'd like to hear a little bit more, please, about the role of the working class as well in this struggle against globalization and against terrorism of Bush and American policy. Thank you.
Okay. Two more questions. I'll take the one on the left and then the right.
I've got these questions to Tariq Ali as well as Professor Shahzad. I'm sorry about her name. Turning the attention to South Asia, of which Tariq Ali obviously has got a lot of knowledge, what do you think about what Jamaat-e-Islami Party and BNP Party is now doing in the name of ethnic cleansing in Bangladesh? The ethnic cleansing, the raping women, gang raping, disfiguring them. And this is not the first time it's happened in Bangladesh. It's happened in 1992, and you well know in 1971. Where is the movement against this kind of terrorism of Hindus, Christians, Buddhists, by fundamentalist Muslim parties? And there's no visible American presence in there. There may be, I do not know. Thank you.
Hi. I'm a New Yorker, and coming here to your country in the wake, I left 2 weeks before the thing and lost friends and stuff like that. There's a huge crisis of confidence in the type of information that's disseminated to the general public, especially in New York. I mean, and I was just wondering, just a quick question, if there was other places I could go that you could recommend. Now I'm new to this type of exploration of information. That's all. If you could just recommend a couple of places to go.
Okay, since the last speaker was so quick, we'll take one more question and that's it.
This question's for all of the panelists. I was just wondering, you know, I have some problems with fully associating myself with the anti-war movement. Like, what are the criteria, if any, for which going to war is justified? Like, we can look at totalitarianisms in the past, and that's what gives us, you know, the confidence to, you know, to stand up for civil rights. But I always worry, like, say I've been in Canadian in 1939, you know, what if I was saying, oh, this Hitler, you know, he's not that weird a guy, you know, the Germans will eventually realize that he's nuts and kick him out, and, you know, oh, Dachau, yeah, Dachau, Shmachau, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, how, you know, like, when do we decide when going to actually physical war is justifiable?
Okay, I'll try and be very brief, because some of the questions I can't answer satisfactorily in a short time. To the question posed by the friend from New York who wanted alternative sites as a reference to what to read, I mean, I think there are a lot in the United States itself. Some of the indie radio stations in New York, in Vermont, in California are broadcasting news which you don't get on the mainstream. There are two sites which I use regularly myself on the net. One is ZNet, and the other is the Counterpunch website, www.counterpunch.org. Very, very useful sites. The information is being handed out, and the American newspaper, the United States newspaper I read the most regularly, actually is the LA Times, which has had some very good coverage of these events. So it's not all bleak, one shouldn't think. The question posed by the speaker from here about Hitler, look, the Western imagination has become very limited in the sense that every time they fight a war over the last 25 years, they say X is Hitler. In 1956, the West said that the radical nationalist president of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, was Hitler. Then Saddam Hussein became Hitler. Then Milosevic became Hitler. Now Osama bin Laden has become Hitler. Do you see? It's a lack of imagination to just constantly carry on saying that all these people are Hitlers. They are not. They have their own particularities. And the war against Afghanistan has got absolutely nothing to do with the Second World War, the war against fascism. The hits of September the 11th are not analogous to Pearl Harbor, which was a hit by a major state in the middle of the Second World War. So these things are precisely designed to confuse, and one's got to get above them and not accept this propaganda. Now, look, when Chile was, when there was a genuine semi-fascist coup d'etat in Chile, did anyone on the left ever say that the Soviet Union should go and bomb Santiago? Or that Fidel Castro should send troops to Santiago? It's not our method. We prefer to trust people to do this work themselves. We don't ask on foreign armies to come and do it because it creates a bigger mess. Same thing can be said for the whole of Central America. It is not the position of people like ourselves to say we need foreign intervention to come in. You have to build the strength of the people. That applies to Iraq. Saddam Hussein was a gangster put in power by the United States to wipe out the trade unions and the communist movement in Iraq. They put him to power. He did their dirty work. They wanted him to fight a war against Iran. He fought that war. Then he stepped out of line on Kuwait because he misunderstood what they had said, and then they went to punish him. And we were opposed to that invasion of Iraq, even though we didn't like Saddam Hussein, because we said in order to topple him, you have to build the strength of the Iraqi people so they can do it themselves. And that's our position. So don't come with these comic book analogies about World War II and fighting the Japanese all over again. They don't help anyone. The question posed about the Jamaat-e-Islami, the religious fundamentalist party in Pakistan and Bangladesh. I agree with you. They are, you know, they did carry out these massacres in 1971 when Bangladesh was formed, and these were inter-Muslim battles. It's one thing which really alienated me from Pakistan, the civil war which they waged against the Bengali people and the propaganda that was used, especially for rapes. Mass rape was justified on the grounds that we are going to change the genes of these Bengalis forever because they are only recent converts to Islam. That actually does come close to bordering on a form, if you like, of fascism. So they have done that, and one has attacked them, and I've written books about them to criticize all this. The question about the Middle East is true, that the central thing about the Middle East is the gold, the oil it produces. But one can't totally say reduce everything to that. The Palestinian question is separate from the oil. And the Palestinian state, I mean, my own position for years was I wanted a binational state of Palestine, Israel, in which all citizens would have the same rights, but the Zionist establishment will never accept that. Because for them, Israel has to remain a Zionist state forever. So they're not going to accept that. The Palestinians, meanwhile, have been suffering now since 1948. Living in refugee camps, treated brutally, ignored by the bulk of the world. The same week September the 11th happened, Palestinians were killed and an Israeli general boasted, look, we went and killed 11 Palestinians and no one cares anymore because of September the 11th. So I'm saying one can't forget this, and one has to insist that if you want to cut off the roots of the despair which feeds in that world, you have to stop the sanctions against Iraq, the bombing of Iraq, and you have to make real efforts to create and help the creation of a viable independent Palestine. Of course, that won't solve all the problems, but it will go some way to showing people that there are political solutions which are possible. As far as the anti-war movement in Britain is concerned, this is a growing movement. It's been totally taken us by surprise. The bulk of the people who come on these demonstrations are under 25. It's demonstrations which large numbers of school students participate in. One reason they participate in them is they're very worried about the kids who they go to school with who are of Muslim origin, who have Muslim names, who they see being victimized sometimes. So it's a real movement of empathy which has helped to build the anti-war movement. The last demonstration we had drew 50,000 people. The next demonstration we have planned for this coming Sunday, one reason why I have to get back to speak at it, is we are expecting between 80 and 90,000 people on this demonstration. I've been doing meetings in towns where, people have been saying, last time we had 3 coaches from this town, this time we've already booked 10. And a real anti-war mood is developing in Britain. One reason is that one of the largest tabloid newspapers, the Daily Mirror, has come out against the war. Which helps. The Railway and Maritime Workers Union has come out against the war. Various Unison branches have come out against the war. And not only did the Daily Mirror come out against the war, but they gave their ace investigative journalist, who they'd sacked ages ago, John Pilger, asked him to write the front page. And he said, I'm only writing for you bastards again if I determine the headline. So they gave him a signed agreement. So he put in a headline saying, this war is a fraud, on the front page of the Daily Mirror. And and the same day, the Daily Mirror editor got phone calls from 10 Downing Street and the defense secretary saying, what the hell do you think you're playing at? So there is a real unease in Britain because of the war, and the anti-war movement is very broad-based. We have one slogan: stop the bombing of Afghanistan, all foreign troops out of South Asia. Sorry? Leave who? Look, if the... So you want the West to go and sort it out? I see. Intervention per se is wrong, but what you want is to impose the program of your political organization on the anti-war movement, and that's unacceptable. You can't build a broad-based anti-war movement if you impose your own programmatic demands on it. An anti-war movement by its very nature has to be broad-based. Within that movement, you and your organization can go and fight against the Taliban, the Northern Alliance, or whoever you want to, but you can't make that a condition for belonging to the anti-war movement. Yeah, of course.
We want the movement not to leave one side alone, because that one side is the bigger part of the terrorism.
Okay, then you build your own party and your own movement, okay? And go and do that, because I'll tell you something. 3 days ago, there was a demonstration in Pakistan, okay? In Pakistan, in Islamabad. 8,000 people came on that demonstration. Not a single beard. That's why it wasn't covered. Who were they? It was the intelligentsia. It was women without veils and without head coverings. It was the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan in the lead who spoke. And what did they say? Just close to where the war is going on, and they've suffered more from the Taliban than you have. What did they say? They said, stop the bombing of Afghanistan immediately, oppose religious extremism. That's what they said.
Because some Pakistani secular guy is giving a wrong slogan, I have to say,
No, my friend, you can give the right slogan to yourself and your handful of friends. You can give it in the morning, you can give it at lunchtime, you can give it at night. All I'm saying is don't impose it on the anti-war movement. This is exactly the sort of sectarianism which can wreck movements. You insist on your own political beliefs. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Best of luck to you. Yeah, I don't need your luck.
Why don't we carry on? This is not a dialogue. There's a lot more people around. It's a wonderful point, and it's obvious that there's a huge disagreement there. We should carry on. Do any one of you have other comments? We ended the question period. They will be outside, and they will be willing to talk. Let's.
For me, it was very interesting. I went to give a presentation to the Postal Workers Union a week ago. And they were talking to me over there about all the problems and the fear that they have now handling the mail for all Canadians. And they were so scared, some of them, because the Christmas time is coming, and they know that there will be millions and millions of letters going different places. And my question was, brothers and sisters, why you don't stand up and say something about this? You know, why not the union movement stand up collectively and join the social movement and we say something about this class war? And I was amazed as well when you see all the coverage that the media have done in terms of the Twin Towers. You know how many illegal migrants were killed in that Twin Towers because they do cleaning? Nobody have talked about all the workers that die and were killed just because they earn $3 a day, you know, and try to send money back home. Nobody have really do an analysis about the implications of that. And in my opinion, this war is so classist as any other wars than the work class is fighting it for the capitalism. And that's the sadness. And we have to stop that. And the unions movements have to take the position and lead the one in terms of to demonstrate that this war is a classist war. But they have to stand up and say it. And we are going to go behind them all the way until the war finish.
So, in closing, you can watch a very interesting debate tomorrow on Counterspin, where Tariq Ali will be face to face with Charles Krauthammer on CBC News World's Counterspin at 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. And the question will be tomorrow. And the question will be, is America fighting a just war? And a very final statement, and it's based on what was said here. If people can solve their problems, problems would be solved. And one quote that came from nobody, because it's from people who would not make it to this environment here. And I'll read it, and then tell you where it comes from. It says, "We have come out to tell the country and the entire world that we are a citizenry that governs, that we are sovereign men and women, that we know how to give and receive solidarity. Step by step, we have been weaving the content of our message. Our steps rescue those left by our ancestors and our own tracks, now blend with those of so many others who resist. From the countryside and the cities against the project of terror and death,
by massacres and globalizations, by fundamentalisms, with mega projects and fumigations, the buying and selling of conscience and complicit silence, with a project which never ceases in its attempts to break what cannot be broken and to finish what has no end. The decision of our peoples is to build autonomy, to extend bridges and bonds between all the excluded majorities. I'm not going to tell you where it comes from. I hope it's from you. Thank you.